In Trinidad's gang-ravaged hills, one name made politicians sweat, police hesitate, and rivals vanish without a trace. Mark Guerra. To the people of La Ventille, he was either a devil in human skin or a misunderstood protector, depending on who you asked. But one thing was certain. Guerra knew how to make people disappear, and he did it with chilling precision. He was more than just a gang boss. He was a recruiter of killers, a negotiator of drug routes, and allegedly a silent partner in political campaigns. His influence stretched from the cracked sidewalks of East Port of Spain to government buildings wrapped in iron and denial. Then in 2004, he was arrested. But Guerra didn't stand trial. He didn't flip. He didn't confess. He was murdered behind bars in what authorities claim was a gang dispute. But in Trinidad, that phrase is code. Code for secrets buried so deep, they were never meant to come out. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The streets that made Mark Guerra. The hillside community of La Ventille is known by many names. To the politicians, it's a hotspot. To the police, a no-go zone. But to those who live within its dense maze of zinc roof homes and winding lanes, La Ventille is just home, a home soaked in sound, culture, and fear. It was in this powder keg of poverty, politics, and pride that Mark Guerra was born sometime in the late 1960s. His name wouldn't be known outside La Ventille for years, but inside its borders, his story was already being whispered in barbershops and corner rum shops before his 18th birthday. Broken promises, built resentments. Trinidad and Tobago's East Port of Spain region, La Ventille included, had long been neglected by successive governments. Roads were potholed, jobs were scarce, and public services were either underfunded or outright absent. Crime grew where opportunity died, and Guerra understood that better than most. He wasn't book smart, but he had an instinct for survival. By the early 1990s, Guerra had transitioned from petty hustling to something more organized. He had charisma, just enough to inspire loyalty, and just enough ruthlessness to command fear. By 1995, he had already built a small but lethal crew. His first real step into notoriety came after a series of brazen daylight robberies and a suspected double murder involving two rival drug runners. Witnesses were too afraid to testify. Police had no leads. The streets had a new name on their lips. Guerra, La Ventille's shadow parliament. Guerra's rise coincided with a growing trend across the Caribbean. Gang lords stepping into power vacuums left by weak or corrupt governments. In La Ventille, if you needed protection, a job, or even help paying school fees, it wasn't your MP you turned to. It was Guerra. He played the part of protector well, hosting community barbecues, handing out school books, and even resolving disputes between families. But these acts of generosity were laced with threat. You obeyed Guerra's rules, or you faced the consequences. Those rules. No rival dealing in his territory without permission. No disrespect in public. And never ever speak to the police. The business of blood. By the late 1990s, Guerra had escalated his operations. La Ventille became a crucial distribution hub in the cocaine corridor, running from Colombia through Venezuela and into the Caribbean. With the Gulf of Paria as a transit point, Guerra's influence grew. He wasn't just moving product, he was building an empire. But what made Guerra so dangerous wasn't just his drug operation, it was his mind. He structured his crew like a paramilitary force. Young boys, some as young as 13, were recruited, trained, and paid to watch corners, carry messages, or, in some cases, carry out executions. He reportedly used local schools to identify promising recruits. The smart, the angry, and the desperate were all candidates for his private army. Violence wasn't a consequence of business. It was a strategy. Kidnappings and contract killings. By 2001, a string of high-profile kidnappings in Trinidad made international headlines. Businessmen vanished from gated homes. Ransom notes followed. And in many cases, the victims were returned. But the message was clear. Nobody was safe. Authorities suspected Guerra's crew, but no charges stuck. Witnesses recanted. Others disappeared. Some were found with bullet holes in the back of their heads and tongues cut out. A calling card. But kidnapping wasn't just a revenue stream. It was political leverage. Several sources claim that Guerra's organization was used to intimidate voters during election seasons. He was seen meeting with low-level political operatives. Opposition rallies in Lavantil were mysteriously disrupted. Police patrols were redirected. The lines between crime, politics, and policing blurred to the point of erasure. Guerra was no longer a street criminal. He was a power broker. War on all sides. Inevitably, power attracts enemies. In 2002, Lavantil erupted into a gang war between Guerra's crew and a splinter group backed by an emerging player known as Leech. It started with a turf dispute, but quickly escalated into daily shootouts, arsons, and assassinations. Families fled, schools closed. News footage showed women wailing in the streets as gunmen exchanged fire on narrow lanes in broad daylight. Through it all, Guerra seemed untouchable. Rumors claimed he wore a bulletproof vest day and night, that he had safe houses under fake names, that even police officers were on his payroll. He was targeted in at least 3 known assassination attempts, including a drive-by attack in 2003 that left his car riddled with bullets. He escaped unharmed, but something had changed. Guerra started moving with fewer men. He stopped appearing in public. And then, in the early morning hours of March 2004, it happened. The arrest nobody expected police claimed they received a tip at 4 a.m., a coordinated raid involving tactical support units and plainclothes officers stormed a house in Beetham Gardens. Inside, they found Guerra asleep, armed and alone. He was arrested without incident, but the neighborhood wasn't silent. As the police vehicles pulled away, residents began throwing stones. Some wept, others cheered. One woman shouted, "He fed my children." The government held a press conference within hours, claiming victory in the war on crime. Guerra, they said, would be charged with weapons possession, conspiracy to commit murder, and drug trafficking. But no charges were ever formally laid in court. Guerra was taken to Golden Grove Prison in Arouca to await trial. He would never make it to court. Death behind bars on April 12, 2004, just weeks after his arrest. Mark Guerra was found dead in his cell. The official report claimed he was stabbed during a dispute with another inmate, but photos leaked to the media showed signs of torture. His fingers were broken, his ribs shattered, his face unrecognizable. The authorities were quick to call it gang-related, but insiders said Guerra had barely interacted with other prisoners. Some claimed he was kept in isolation. Others whispered that he had threatened to talk, to name names, politicians, police, maybe even judges. No one was ever charged with his murder. Instead, his funeral became a flashpoint. Over 3,000 people flooded the streets of Lavantil. Gunfire broke out during the procession. Several rival gang members were executed within days. Schools closed again. The country braced for a war that never fully ended. Chapter 2. Guerra's Ghost. The Secrets That Still Rule the Streets. Mark Guerra's body had barely cooled when the first bullets flew in the streets. The corners of Lavantil, already tense, already policed like a war zone, lit up like a battleground. Within 48 hours of his death, 6 men were dead. 3 were rival gang members. 1 was a police informant. The other 2 were said to be traitors from within. But what made Guerra's murder more than just another gangland hit was the sheer silence that followed, not just from his allies, from everyone. Police went mum, politicians dodged questions. Even the media, known for sensationalizing crime stories, backed away. Why? because Guerra had crossed into territory few dared to mention publicly. He was a criminal who held political capital, and now he was dead in custody, murdered, not convicted. Silenced before he could speak. The inconvenient witness. At the time of his death, Guerra was reportedly on the verge of cutting a deal. An insider from the Ministry of National Security, speaking off the record, claimed that Guerra had asked for a lawyer and made it known that he wanted protection in exchange for testimony. Testimony about what? The insider's voice lowered, not about the drug trade, about who protected it. According to this source, Guerra was ready to expose names, government officials, police officers, and even members of the business elite who had laundered drug money through shell companies. But then, before that meeting could happen, he was dead. The government, for its part, claimed no such meeting was ever scheduled. No deal, no protection request, nothing in writing, nothing on the books, which conveniently meant nothing to investigate. But Guerra's inner circle knew otherwise. A network that never died. Though Guerra was gone, his lieutenants weren't. Names like Spider, Fat Man, and Ziggy rose quickly in the power vacuum left behind, and they didn't mourn quietly. One of Guerra's closest men, a feared enforcer known only as Kyle G, gave a rare interview to a Trinidadian underground radio station 2 weeks after the funeral. Mark didn't just run a gang, he said. He ran a system, and the system is still running. It don't stop with him. That system, it turns out, extended far beyond La Ventille. One confidential police dossier from 2005 detailed how Guerra's operations had linked up with Venezuelan smugglers, Dominican middlemen, and Jamaican syndicates. Cocaine flowed in. Guns followed. Violence spiked. But more disturbingly, the report concluded with a redacted section labeled only Persons of Interest, Non-Criminal Affiliations. Those were the alleged untouchables. Lawyers, judges, policemen, and at least one prominent political figure rumored to have employed Guerra's crew during election season to suppress opposition turnout in key districts. Again, nothing was proven. No arrests, no hearings, only silence. The politics of fear in Trinidad, crime and politics have danced a deadly tango for decades. But Mark Guerra marked a turning point. Before Guerra, gang leaders were feared. After Guerra, they were courted. Politicians, on both sides of the aisle, began quietly negotiating with street bosses. Deals were made under the guise of community outreach. Funding was funneled into job creation programs in gang-controlled zones. Elections grew more volatile. In a 2006 parliamentary hearing, one senator openly stated, "If we do not confront the political utility of these gangs, we will continue to reap blood from ballots." His microphone was cut mid-sentence. 1 year later, that senator survived an attempted car bombing. The case remains unsolved. Guerra's family and the curse of a name. In the years following Guerra's death, his family fell under constant pressure. His mother, once a respected matriarch in the community, was forced into hiding after her home was firebombed in 2005. She later fled to the U.S., where she died in obscurity in 2012. His younger brother, Jason Guerra, attempted to launch a legal clothing business called East Royalty. The brand used stylized images of Mark on t-shirts and caps. It quickly gained popularity in La Ventille and beyond. Police raided his warehouse within 6 weeks. Jason was detained for questioning in relation to gang financing. He was released without charge, but never reopened the store. Asked in a rare 2011 interview whether he thought his brother's death was a government hit, Jason replied, "I don't think. I know. Ghost wars and legacy hits." By 2010, a new generation of gang leaders had emerged, but their methods bore Guerra's fingerprints. Instead of public shootouts, they favored extortion behind the scenes. Instead of flashy violence, they use intimidation with political precision. A leaked 2013 report from the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service listed over 400 unsolved murders in East Port of Spain alone from 2000 to 2013. Over 60% were believed to be gang-related. Guerra's name still showed up in incident reports, sometimes as the origin of blood feuds still being settled a decade later. One police officer, speaking anonymously, said, "Every time we think the war ended with Guerra, another body shows us it didn't." Even more chilling, the officer claimed that during a 2014 operation in Beetham, they found surveillance photos of current ministers in a gang hideout. Some were taken at private homes, others at campaign events. How did those photos get there, and what were they being used for? We may never know, but the implication is clear. Guerra's ghost still walks the halls of power and the streets that birthed him. The fixer that got away, one final, mysterious player remains unaccounted for in Guerra's story. The man known only as Mr. C, he was allegedly Guerra's connection to Trinidad's elite. Described as a businessman with political ties and a penchant for disappearing before arrests, Mr. C was said to have arranged arms shipments, legal cover, and even media blackouts in the years Guerra operated unchecked. In 2007, a man fitting Mr. C's description was seen leaving a private party hosted by a sitting government minister in Westmorins. That minister resigned 2 months later, citing family reasons. No media outlet dared link the two events, except one. The editor of that outlet, a small weekly newspaper called Port Watch, was found beaten and unconscious in his office. The paper shut down the next day. Mr. C has never been named, never arrested, never charged. His name exists only in whispers, in scribbled notebooks seized during raids, and in the anxious silences of ex-cops who know better than to say too much. But every investigator who has looked into Guerra's death agrees on one thing. If Guerra was silenced, Mr. C may have been the one who gave the order. What the autopsy didn't say for years, Guerra's autopsy report remained classified. Then in 2021, a copy was leaked by a whistleblower to a local journalist. The findings were damning. Multiple fractures to the face and jaw, inconsistent with inmate fight, signs of ligature around the neck, but no mention in official police statement. Internal bruising consistent with sustained beating post-mortem delay, suggesting body was left unattended for hours. Perhaps most tellingly, the toxicology report was redacted in full. No explanation, no summary, no release, just black lines. Why redact a toxicology report for a man who died in a stabbing? Unless the cause of death was more complicated than anyone wanted to admit. Unless Guerra was poisoned. Unless Guerra was tortured for information before being disposed of. Final questions that still haunt Trinidad. Mark Guerra's death was supposed to bring peace. Instead, it created a vacuum filled with ghosts. Ghosts of truth, justice, and accountability. His story raises uncomfortable questions that Trinidad still hasn't answered. Who benefits when men like Guerra die before trial? Why were so many officials desperate to ensure he never spoke? And how many more men like Guerra exist today, walking free, holding power, protected not by bulletproof vests, but by bureaucracy? As one retired detective put it, in Trinidad, you don't just bury bodies, you bury truths. Mark Guerra's name may never appear on a plaque, but in La Ventil, it is legend. In Port of Spain, he is a cautionary tale, and in the halls of silence where politics and power meet crime, he is the ghost that never stops knocking.